Kristen and surfing, and now we're even recording it. And so we have a number of talks in that context here. So the first talk is by Wei Liu, as we saw, and or as we already discussed with, and he's going to talk about some predictions for the FCCHH. So you can share your screen, please.
Okay. So can you see my screen now?
Mm-hmm. We do.
Okay. Yeah. So shall I start?
It's full screen. It's okay. We hear you well. So, okay. You're all set. Let's go.
So many thanks for the invitation. I'm really glad to give a talk as it's an FCC workshop with the LLP community. So I'm Wei Liu from Nanjing University of Science and Technology. And today I'm going to talk about having neutrinos as FCCHH in the U1 PLR model. So this talk is mainly based on a paper that is just published at PRD. And I would like to thank my collaborators, Sichita Kalkani and Frank Dabish. Okay, so let's start with neutrino mass. We all know that the finding of the neutrino mass in the neutrino oscillation experiment is a great breakthrough in the particle physics, because it pointed out that the standard model is not complete, because the standard model does not predict neutrino masses. But not only that, we found out that the neutrino mass is very tiny. You only have EV of neutrino mass, but other fermions at least have like mega EV. So there is 6 magnitude gap between them. And also the neutrinos are the only neutral fermions. So we might have a question, okay, maybe the neutrinos have different origin or masses. So now we can review that, okay, what are the mass mechanism in the standard model or in the, so I think in general, like gauge theory, we have two kinds of mass mechanism. So first one is Dirac mass term. This is very general. So you have a left and right fermion with a Higgs, and all the standard model fermion has this kind of mass term. But also if one right-hand fermion is on antiparticle, so it must be a neutral fermion. So it can, because this is Majorana mass, I mean mass term. So the Dirac-Nard mass term has this problem. If the neutrino has this other standard particle has this Dirac mass terms, then we find one very strange thing is that you call carbon is going to be very small. It's because that the neutrino mass is very small, it's like EV, but you have the Higgs potential like 200 GeV. That means the Yukawa is very small, and we don't like that. We think it's unnatural. Everything, every carbon should have a similar magnitude, like order of one for ideal. So now we want to fix it. So one possibility is that if the neutrino mass are introduced by both of them, then we have this kind of a mass matrix. So the zero MD, MD, MR. So this is so-called seesaw mechanism. It's because when you're diagonalizing this mass matrix, you have two mass eigenstates. So the first one is going to be inverse proportional to the second one. So since we know that the first mass eigenstate is very tiny, so we'll need another very heavy mass eigenstate. So we call the first one the light neutrino mass, and the second one the heavy neutrino. Therefore, if we making this MR, the Majorana neutrino mass term to be very heavy, we can still making this Dirac mass to be like order GeV, which means that the Yukawa carbon is natural again. So in that sense, we can naturally explain the tininess of preserved neutrino mass, and this so-called the seesaw mechanism. And the simplest theory is the new MSM model. Okay, so now we say that explaining the tininess of neutrino mass by adding a right-hand neutrino, so-called the type 1 seesaw. Now we can see how to test it, how to prove that we are true. So the most direct way is to find the right-hand channel, and the most powerful, most promising environment is at Collider with the LCC. And at the LCC, with the production process channels, including the S-channel production, like via the decay or diode boson or zeta boson, or via some key channel by the VDF process. And we are going to show that all of this process is not going to probe the seesaw mechanism. That is because all this process depending on the active star mixing, and we are going to introduce now. So like quarks, so neutrinos has has mass eigenstates and flavor eigenstates, and they mix between each other. And we call the mixing as active steroid mixing. Okay, and if you're diagnosing the mass matrix, and you are solving that this is the squares active steroid mixing is approximate to the ratio between the light neutrino mass and the heavy neutrino mass. Since we know the light neutrino mass is only EV, and the right neutrino we are looking for is as colliders, so it should have mass of GeV. So this means that this V square is very tiny. It's going to be smaller than 10 to minus 10. So you can see here is the current summary of the limits of the heavy neutrino searches. So you see that this black dot line are the type 1 seesaw relation. And all these current flooded searches, including some proposed one, are not going to probe the type 1 seesaw. That means that we need to look for other product channel to probe the type 1 seesaw. So what we come to realize that if the right neutrino are coupling to other gauge, so then it can produce via some gauge boson decays. So we choose the gauge to be the B minus L, okay, which is, I think, is one of the simplest model. And if we introduce such U1 gauge, we can also making the type 1 seesaw mechanism more natural, because now the Marana neutrino mass is going to be produced via spontaneous symmetric breaking of this U1 gauge. So like a Stanmore Higgs, okay. And this kinds of the gauge portal have been searched vastly as colliders. So you see here is the Z prime mass, and here is the Z prime coupling. So at LC, I think it's very powerful to probe the, like some TEV Z prime. So for some TEV Z prime, the current mixing of the coupling is 10 to 1, 2. This is very small. But with help of LCC HM machine, we have like 100 TeV collision energy, and we are very promising to probe this Z prime, like with a mass of more than like 5 TeV. Okay, so indeed we have shown the cross section in this figure. So you see that for like 5 TeV Z prime, the LCC HH is going to produce like 100 times more sensitivity than the LC. And even with a very conservative benchmark of the gauge coupling, we can still have like one benchmark of Z prime. So the Z prime will later decay into a pure right hand neutrino, and the right hand neutrino will decay to give us some multiple final states. Okay, and since the branch ratio for Z prime to the right hand neutrino is appreciable large, so we are still going to find at least hundreds of heavy neutrino from such a heavy Z prime. Okay, so since we have talked about the production of the heavy neutrino, let's talk about the its signatures. Okay, so yes, today we are talking about LLP. Okay, so we find that heavy neutrino are indeed LLP. Okay, it's because heavy neutrino, it always decays via this 3-bar decay. Okay, So you need to decay by some gauge boson or scalars. And it can decay either, like this is fully leptonic and this is semi-leptonic. And we are going to show that due to the seesaw mechanism, you have this very small, tiny antistrand mixing, okay? And because of this mixing, you will see that the decay length of the Hamming neutrino is going to be like meters within this GeV scale. And here, I need to introduce about this neutrino, this seesaw band, because we know that there are at least one neutrino with mass between the 0.1 eV and 0.3 eV. That's because we know that there are the heaviest neutrino is going to be larger than the 0.1 eV, because we have this atmospherical neutrino mass difference. And also the neutrino need to be smaller than 0.1 eV or 0.3 eV, because the Planck collaboration told us that, well, from the CMB curve, CMB observation, okay. So basically, this will point us that the V square is going to be like below 10 minus 10, okay. So everything below that is also fine, because you can have a neutrino which is a lot lighter than heavy neutrino. So it all tell us that the neutrino has very large decay length. So if the heavy neutrino has like meter decay length, we need to see it differently. Because normally, I think in colliders, we search particles inside the vertex locator. But now because it's an LLP, it decays at a macroscopic distance from the IP. So we are actually going to detect them inside the tracker system, or cavalry system, or even the muon system. Okay. And these kinds of heavy neutrino are very unique, because it came from very heavy Z prime, okay? And the FZH is very powerful. So its kinematical distribution is very different compared to the LHC. We see is that this heavy neutrino is going to have very large PT. That means they are largely boosted. So if they are light, then its final state, maybe dimuons, mu and jet, is going to be very collimated. So we need some special treatment. So I'm referring to the paper Pat Han, Rogerling et al., which is just published at the archive for the detailed analysis. Okay. So after all, we have done the searches of heavy neutrinos as FZHH. So we have done two different processes. We have not only done the BMSL channel, but also the standard channel. So BMSL channel means that the heavy neutrino are produced via the decay of Z prime. Standard one means that it's produced via the double boson. Okay, and here we are also showing that there are some curve has labeled DV. This means that they are only particle searches. And the curve, the contour without them means they are prompt search. So we see that all the LLP search have better sensitivity comparing to the prompt one, because the prompt one have very large standard model background. And all the BMSL channels are better than the standard model channel, because they don't suffer from this inverse proportional to this V square, okay? And comparing all of them, we can plot large parameter space of the heavy neutrino. And what we find out is that, okay, this LLP search can probe a very large parameter space of the type 1 seesaw. So here it covers the type 1 seesaw band and even below it. And even for this prompt search, we can cover little of them if the heavy neutrino are heavy enough, so they're going to be prompt. Okay, so our conclusion is that we can test the seesaw as FZHH via this gauge portal. Okay, so this figure is very similar. Just the final state is mu JJ, so semi-labitonic. So because you have multiple jets, so the branch ratio is larger and you get a better cross-section and you are probing lower mixing. Okay, everything is very similar. And I also want to point out that the heavy neutrino cannot be too light. If they are too light, they are not going to give you two jets. And you need to search them, find the Mason decays, and it's going to be performed at the ship. Okay, so now we come to our conclusion. So, neutrino physics is very interesting. I think the most important one is that we don't know the region of neutrino mass. So I think type 1 seesaw is one of the simplest solution, and we want to test them and colliders. But if the right hand neutrino are produced by the double boson, then I cannot really probe the type 1 seesaw. So we come. So we need some additional gauge. And with this gauge, we can additional poison via the decay of the gauge boson. And we will show that this production of the right channel, if we search them via the LLP channel signatures, then we are going to test the type 1 seesaw at the FCCHH. So I think this is the end of my talk. And then many thanks.
Okay, well, thank you very much for this interesting contribution. And we're going to take a few questions. A quick one, in fact, on your slide 10, did I understand that this blue region within the rectangle is everything you take in there?
Yes.
You're going to take for cross-section? So you assume, I mean, that's a displaced produced neutrino that decays and you will see it in your acceptance. I mean, you will take it as your acceptance right now.
Yes. So I think I'm just roughly considered that all the neutrino decay inside this volume.
Yeah.
Regarded as LLP. Yeah.
Okay, because it's not quite optimally instrumented to do that, but at least fine. This gives you the maximum type of decays you can see and that you use for your okay, good. Just I understand. Thanks. Fede?
Okay, thank you very much. This is very interesting. Can you go to slide 12, please?
Sure, yeah.
So when you look at the region between, well, above the charm threshold, so where the kink for ship is, and below 6, 7, have you considered different production modes to study HNL productions in FCC, for example, coming from bees or also come from Ks? Anyway, ways to try to explore lower masses?
I think people have already done them as LC. So, yeah. So heavy neutrino within this mass range is going to dominantly produced by the Mason decays. And but I haven't seen anyone doing it at the FCCHH.
Mm-hmm.
I think the background is going to be very different.
No, sure. I mean, it requires a different study. This is clear, but it should be possible, I would say. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks. Is there a quick final question?
It's already 18 minutes, so we can...
I know. But, just that the conveners don't, monopolize the whole session. So, but if not, in this case, thanks again, Relu. And we now go to Guillermo Gambini, which I think is around, and his talk is there.
Hello.
Hi there. So if you can share your screen.
Oh, sure. Yes, can you see it now?
Okay, we see it and we hear you, and you're gonna tell us about neutral leptons interacting with singlet scalars. Take it away.
All right. First, I would like to thank the organizers for the invitation, and I would like to thank everyone for coming. This talk will begin with describing heavy neutral leptons. And we all know about it, but let me talk about it. And then how we technique that we use to reproduce the limits from Delphi, Bell, and Charm experiments, these all experiments. And then we'll tell you what happens when we add light singlet scalars that couples to the HNLs and also mix with the Higgs. All right. So we're aware that neutrinos are massive, you know, since about the end of the last millennium, right? But the question is, how do we know that they have mass? You know, and this is the short answer is neutrino oscillations, right? Because that's the simple explanation to the solid neutrino problem, and that requires neutrinos to be massive, right? And also that they have different masses. And how do they get their mass? You know, is it the Higgs mechanism? Is it extra dimension? Is it something else? I particularly don't know, but I think nobody knows. But there are many well-motivated proposals that need to be tested in the laboratory. Right. So here I'm going to talk to you about the seesaw mechanism very quickly. You know, I will give a brief example, which is of a new standard model singlet fermion that mixes with the electron neutrino, okay? Exclusively with the electron neutrino. So in this case, we have this mass matrix for this in this electron neutrino and news in HNL basis, right? It will allow us to compute the masses. We don't have mass equals zero anymore. We have two masses. One, there is this small mass, and one, this heavy mass, right? But we want to know what, who has this mass, right? And the light state is mostly the electron neutrino, right? And a small fraction of the new singlet fermion, right? And the most massive state, the heavier one, is mostly the new state, right? And what characterizes the new physics here, you know, that is this ratio between these two unknown parameters, right? They are not known. Since they tell us what new physics is there, people have been looking for them for a long time, and we can just simply call them mixing angle and look for them in experiments. Mm-hmm. Cool. So this is a cartoon to understand Delphi experiment. Apologize to the experimentalists because there are, you know, many detectors and calorimeters and stuff that I'm not an expert, right? So I just want to say that we think of electron positrons colliding, right? Then they will produce a bunch of particles. If they have the right energy, they can produce these Z-balls. And then it can decay, right, into leptons like electrons, muons, nouns, and hadrons and neutrinos, right? And we expect this new physics to manifest in the mixing with light neutrinos and produce this heavy neutral lepton. And this heavy neutral lepton can actually decay through weak interactions, right? Like this neutron interaction or charge currents, right? And produce pairs of lepton, neutrinos, and quarks, and then hadronize, and So we can use this experiment to put constraints on the mixing of the HNL, right, of the new standard model singlet fermion with the active neutrinos, right? And that's what's shown in this figure on the right, which is the mixing angle as a function of the mass, right? Everything that is above this line is ruled out at 90% confidence level by the Delphi collaboration. And what we did in this work was to add the singlet fermion. You know, it's a standard model singlet scalar, sorry, right? The other is, so we have this singlet scalar and this singlet fermion. And both of them interacting, we change the limits on this mixing angle. because first of all, the singlet can mix. If it can mix with the Higgs boson, then it can inherit its decay. It can decay into Persov fermions. There is, for example, in this experiment, what it looks for, right? And so this singlet could be faking, you know, or could be mimicking the decays of the HNL of the weak decays, right? So we wonder what happens to this limb. I will very briefly here to describe how we the method that we use to calculate these limits. Because first we need to be confident that we can reproduce these limits, and we did it by finding the number of events. Right, the number of events is the number of parent particles divided by multiplied by the probability. Three probabilities actually: one of producing the HNL, and then of the HNL decay into what it looks for a particular decay. For a particular experiment, right? And also, we need to know if we can reconstruct this event, right? In an experiment where the detector is far from the target, like is shown in this figure, at distance d, this will be the last formula, the third probability. If we have, like in Delphi, electroquestrion collisions inside the detector, right? And then d will be zero, and we get a different. That's how it changes the results. What we do was to compute the fraction of events actually in a grid. We made a grid, first of all, and compute in every point of this grid this quantity, right? And then we compare the result to the published result, right, of the collaboration. So we first plot contours of this fraction of events. Right, we took it for 10 to the minus 5 and 10 to the minus 7, and we saw, okay, this is close but not good enough. And then we found that for 10 to the minus 6 approximately, we get these red lines that are good fits, you know, but still we have a problem in the left, you know, for light neutrinos, light HNLs. And then we found out for around 200 centimeters, we get, you know, this result in blue, you know, the one we use for now as the limits from weak decays from Delphi. And we did the same for Baron Charm. We had some small discrepancies with the published result. I'm going to talk about later if someone is interested. But here I want to raise a question. We have two questions here to ask ourselves when we add the singlet, okay? Because things are going to change. Who's going to win? The weak decays, which are three-body decays, you know, of the HNL, or the new channel that are two-body decays, you know, just the singlet and the neutrino, right? Neutrino. We're going to win. So we quantify this with this equations over here. And now, okay, regardless of who wins, what's going to happen? There are going to be more decays inside the detector or outside the detector? What's going to happen? What's going to happen there? With the original Delphi formula that we have here, we can get the limits, you know, that I showed before in blue, right, in light blue for the Delphi experiment. And when we add the singlet, this limit changed, the formula changed a little bit, you know, considering this new production of the singlet and the decay, and that the length decay length of the HNL will change also, right? It will be increased by the new channel. All right. So this is the most interesting part, which is part where I showed you the results. In blue, we have, you know, the limit with pure weak interactions. And when we add a singlet that has this particular mixing with the Higgs boson, 10 to the minus 7, that's a very small mixing, there's not ruled out by any experiments so far. And it couples to the HNLs, you know, with this three strands that I'm showing here, right? It will change the limit. It opens the parameter space, you know, when the singlet is kinematically allowed to be produced. Like in this case, it's a AGV singlet that can, you know, starts around here. And then the parameter space opens, but then it closes again, you know, for it approaches the original limit. From weak decays, because you know, it's the production is suppressed, right? Yeah, because of kinematics. Yes, all of this is for Majorana neutrinos, It's in the case of pure mixings, right? We only do it for electron here or tau. In this case, limits are independent of H&F favors, right? So we've done that for many other configurations, right? For different masses of the singlets from 50 MeV to around 8 GeV, you know? And for small mixings with a Higgs boson. And you know, sometimes we have we open the parameter space a lot, sometimes not so much, and sometimes we get actually close it. But you know, that's life. So that with results that are very similar to the original result, that it's difficult to see, you know, with the naked eye. We did the same for Bell, right? Here I'm showing you for mixes with electron and with muon. And the interesting thing here is that for Bell, we always open the parameter space because you know, we have the singlet that if it mimics the decays of the HNL, right? Then we can change the limits can open or close the parameter space. But in this case, the singlet cannot decay into what Bell looks for, which were pions and leptons together, right? So the HNL cannot decay into a pion. So that's why they're blind to the case of the singlet, and the parameter space always opens in this case. Mm-hmm. For charm, does it have that? Okay. For charm, we had something similar to what happened to with Delphi. Sometimes space opens, sometimes it closes, you know. Sometimes we had with a new region because the singlet now can decay and where it shouldn't be supposed to be anything, you know. And that would actually give a signal that we interpret as you know, decoupling of the HNL with the active neutrinos. Yeah. So quickly to the conclusions, and these are that yes, we can open the parameter space, you know, sometimes in many cases. We'll get a light single scalar, right? Or vector maybe, you know, with kinetic mixings, playing the role of the mixing with the Higgs, right? We didn't do that in this work, but it's open, you know. And also this method is you know, saves us a lot of time. We didn't have to do any expensive Monte Carlo simulation and stuff like that. You know, that I don't know what to do, so that's good. And also, like, it can be used for other experiments, you know, not only the one that we've shown here, but for other things that we're maybe interested in doing. Yes. So I encourage you to give it a try and prepare with model and have some fun. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. It was quite interesting contribution, but I'm still sort of muddling it in my mind exactly what the message is, just for my help. So the limits you calculate, is that then assuming you don't see any experimental signature of the singlet?
Yes, exactly. That's what this curve tells us, right? It's okay. That when we calculate the number of events there, minus the background. Yes,
that's events you lose because of it. They're going to a singlet and you don't observe that.
Exactly. The singlet, but if it's long-lived,
you know, reversely, you could try to detect the singlet.
Exactly. Yes. Okay.
But that's not what you discuss here. Just how our phase space gets reduced by the cause that you have this extra singlet in the production. Percent decay. Yeah, okay, thanks. Giovanna?
Hi, yes, thanks, Guillermo. Just a quick question. This mixing is the mixing with the singlet. This is why it's in the independent of the flavor, as you said.
Oh, yeah. Yes, the mixing, well, we consider pure mixings, right? For instance, here, yes, here we have mixings exclusively with electrons, electron neutrinos, and here exclusively with mu neutrinos. Yes,
but in your previous plot, you had the constraint upper limits on the mixing with the light scalar. This one, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, sorry. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Yes. Thanks.
Yes.
Right, these were good clarifications. Any further questions, Fede?
Yes, thank you very much. So, assuming one wants to, let me understand, why did you pick Delphi, Bell, and Charm specifically?
Oh, okay. Yes, we were interested in HNLs in the mass range from about...
below the Charm threshold.
Yeah, below 10 GeV, more or less. And so we started looking for, there are other limits from Atlas and CMS, 500 ROM, right? They're also competitive.
They're not competitive. They're world leading.
Yeah, yeah. And yes, but they also apply for-
Could you perform the same exercise also with those limits?
I believe we could, we should, yeah. I don't know how simple it would be, you know, but, yeah,
of course, the production modes would vary. And then you also have different production modes from...
Maybe you want to discuss on Mattermost because I think yeah. We do have to move on.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks very much, Guillermo.
Thank you.
And we now go to the next speaker. And I think Fede takes over. Krzysztof.
Yes, can you hear me and can you see me as well?
I see you and we hear you.
Yes, so I'm trying to share my slides.
That works fine.
Yes, maybe I just try to make it as a presentation.
And even bigger. Very good.
Okay, can I start?
Yep. Go ahead.
Thank you very much. Okay, great. Thank you for the invitation. I want to talk about heavy neutrinos at future E plus E minus colliders, and this work was done in collaboration with Jürgen Reiter from DESI and Alexander Filip Żurnecki from University of Warsaw. And the paper describing the whole analysis is available on archive. Let me start the presentation with a short introduction to the topic. As all we know, there are some problems in the standard model, basically connected with some cosmological observations. I mean, these observations are the most convincing ones that there is something beyond the standard model. In some theories with these problems, neutrinos are connected. Then we can try to explain such problems as dark matter density, baryon asymmetry, and so on by introducing, for example, new species of neutrinos. In many models, these neutrinos are very heavy. They can be light, heavy, right-handed, and so on. But in many of these scenarios, these neutrinos are heavy. And moreover, in many of these extensions of the standard model, the neutrinos are weakly coupled to the standard model. And then they are long-lived. However, in my presentation, I want to focus on PROM decays of the heavy neutral leptons. So if you want to get to know more about heavy long-lived neutrinos, you have to go to other presentations. But still, I think that my presentation can be interesting for the audience, even if I focus on the short-lived neutrinos. So the question is how to introduce the heavy neutrinos to the standard model. Well, the easiest way is to add some terms to the standard model Lagrangian. First, one can add the term corresponding to the heavy neutrino propagator and then some terms corresponding to new interactions. In our case, we have three new vertices. We have interactions with W, with Z, and Higgs bosons. And this kind of a scenario is a minimal scenario. We don't have any additional gauge bosons. We just have standard model bosons and extra neutrinos. Of course, one has to implement such a model to do any analysis. And then we use the heavy N model. It's a new UFO model implemented within the Fein rules. It's a kind of an effective extension of the standard model. And the choice of this model was done because the model was widely analyzed for searches at hadron colliders. You can find many different papers on this topic. In the model, there are three new heavy neutrinos. They can be both Majorana or Dirac particles, and they are denoted as N1, N2, and N3. in the model, there are 12 different free parameters. First, we have three masses of these three new neutrinos, and these masses can be set in the range from hundreds of GeV up to a few thousand of GeV. And there are also 9 mixing parameters, which are just elements of 3x3 mixing matrix between the standard model leptons and these heavy neutrinos. Of course, the question is where we can search for such neutrinos, because if we want to search for these particles, if we want to observe prompt decay, so decays of such particles into some standard model particles, then an important thing to do is to reduce background and possible background contributions to our analysis. One way to do so is to use future Eplasi minus colliders as the ones listed here. So currently there are 4 different proposals of an Eplasi minus machine, FCCE and CEPC, which are circular colliders, and ILC and CLIQ, which are linear colliders. And in this presentation, I want to focus on ILC and CLIQ because linear colliders offer higher energies. And if we want to search for really heavy particles, then we just need high energies to be able to produce these particles. Let me say a few words about each of these proposals. So first, ILC, it's a collider to be built in Japan, and it would use superconducting accelerating cavities to accelerate electrons and positrons. Length of this project is assumed to be 31 kilometers, and it would offer energy starting from 250 GeV up to 500 GeV. Also, there are some considerations concerning the Z-pole. And also, there is a possible upgrade up to 1 TeV. An excellent feature of this machine is that both beams at ILC could be polarized at the level of 80% for electrons and 30% for positrons. Compact linear collider is another proposition to be built at CERN, and it would use another accelerating scheme, a novel scheme of using two different beams, first drive beams, providing the radio frequency power to accelerate main beams, and then it would be able to achieve energies up to 3 TeV, but there are 3 different energy stages assumed for this proposal, starting from 380 GeV, 1.5 TeV up to 3 TeV. And at CLIQ, only electron beam would be polarized at the level of 80%. Okay, in our analysis, we focus on the single heavy neutrino production. And to search for this process, we can use many different ways. There are both direct ways when we search for some prompt signatures, for example, QQL nu, QQ nu nu, or LL nu nu. And also some indirect methods like electroweak precision observable Higgs branching ratios. And also if the neutrinos are long-lived, displaced vertices are possible as well. In this case, we probe the signature of two quarks, lepton and neutrino, because it allows for direct reconstruction of the heavy neutrino. If we are able to measure 2 jets in the lepton, then we can say something about mass of the heavy neutrino. In our setup, we considered both Dirac and Majorana neutrinos, but in this presentation, I want to focus on the Dirac case. N1 masses were set to from 200 GeV up to 3.2 TeV, and masses of N2 and N3 particles were set to 10 TeV. All the couplings of N1 were set to the same value, and the value of 0.003 was used for the generation of reference signal samples, but in general, this parameter was a free parameter of our analysis, and all the N2 and N3 couplings were set to 0. So in other words, we have only 1 heavy neutrino in the game. We considered 3 different collider scenarios, but I want to focus on ILC 500 GeV with an integrated luminosity of 1.6 inverse atto bonds and polarization of minus 80% for electrons and plus 30% for positrons. Here you can see a cross-section for our signal process for different collider setups. for left-right polarization, including beam spectra. Important thing to observe here is that the cross-section is almost uniform up to the energy threshold. It's of the order of 10 femtobond for each collider, and then it decreases very fast up to, below 10 to the second and so on. Of course, it is not a kind of background tree analysis, because in the standard model we have many processes which are in fact background for this kind of searches, and also the same process can be mediated with light neutrinos, right? So we have exactly the same diagrams when we replace the heavy neutrino with a light one, and then we have an example of background process. But of course there are also many different processes which can contribute to this analysis. Now I want to present you our analysis procedure. So first we generated physical events with Wizard. Basically there were two groups of the events. So first we generated our signal, again E plus E minus going to a light heavy neutrino pair, and then heavy neutrino decaying into two quarks and a lepton, and it's our signal and the background. So all the processes without and propagators without the heavy neutrino, and in the analysis we also included E gamma and gamma gamma background channels. Then we simulated detector response with DELFES. It's a fast simulation framework which allows to parameterize our detector acceptance. And in the next steps, we preselected events matching the required signal topology. In this case, we wanted to have exactly one heavy neutrino. So to get this signature, we searched for the events with two jets and one lepton, and that's all. Then we used machine learning and CLS to get our final results. So please look here at this plot of the QQL invariant mass after the preselection stage. So you can observe three different curves for EE background, gamma gamma, and E gamma background, and also for our signal. It's a kind of reference scenario with mass of the heavy neutrino of 300 GeV. And you can observe very visible peak at this 300 GeV, which corresponds to the mass of the heavy neutrino. Of course, the signal is below the background, so it's not perfect, but still you can see that this variable is really powerful in discriminating between a background and signal samples. Then, as I said, we used the machine learning. In this case, it was the boosted decision trees algorithm with 8 input variables. And in this plot, you can observe a distribution of the BDT response for background and signal. It was done for the same scenario with heavy neutrino with mass of the of 300 GeV and muon in the final state, because at this level we treated separately electrons and muons in the final state. And as you can observe, those distributions are not separated, but still you can see that there is a kind of separation between these two distributions. Then we implemented the CLS using the BDT response distribution to build a model within RuSTAT. And then we were able to combine channels and also implement normalization uncertainties. Here you can see still results for electrons and muons separately. These are limits on the cross section for our signal process as a function of mass of the heavy neutrino. You can see that results for muons are slightly better because these are exclusion limits. So we want to have them as low as possible. So yes, so results for muons are slightly better, but in any case, the results are of the order of 0.1 or 1 femtobonds. Then we translated our results into a plot, which is a bit more convincing, I believe. Here you can see limits on the VLN squared. It's our mixing parameter, for results from our analysis and for different from different analysis. So first you can see results for ILC 500 GeV, ILC 1 TeV, and Click 3 TeV compared to results coming from the CMS. These are currently limits coming from the real experiments. And these are projected results for high Lumi LHC, high energy LHC, and FCCHH. You can see that results for the electron positron colliders are by orders of magnitude more stringent than those obtained at hadron machines. One important thing here is that in this analysis with these three hadron machines, there was a kind of different assumption because they excluded tau from the analysis, so they does get slightly better results because of this fact. In our analysis, we still have tau. If we exclude tau from the analysis, we will have even more stringent results than those presented here. And the last question in my presentation is if the neutrinos are really short-lived. So in our case, for the lowest masses considered in this study, again, it was at the order of hundreds of GeV, the limits obtained in this analysis correspond to widths of the heavy neutrino at the level of a few kiloelectronvolts, and then C tau is below 1 nanometer. So in any case, we are not able to observe any displaced vertices, for example, because the neutrinos from the experimental point of view are really short-lived. Of course, one important thing is here is that in principle, we can search for long-lived neutrinos in this kind of model, but then the masses of such a particle should be below or at the order of mass of the W. It brings me to my conclusions, and I hope I convinced you that at future E plus E minus colliders, we would be able to search for heavy neutrinos in a direct way, and the neutrinos could be observed almost up to the kinematic limit, and the results are much stronger than those at LHC or any other hadron machines. And our analysis was already accepted for the JHEP, and it should be published very, very soon. Thank you very much for your attention.
Feder, I think you're in charge now.
Okay, thank you very much. That was 15 minutes sharp. So let's see if there are any questions. If not, I will start by asking you a question related to the plot you show on slide 16. So of course, okay, this is the money plot essentially. Now, how did you take these the lines for the LHC? Like, for example, I heard you mention the fact about the tau. Could you elaborate on that and
yes,
is the CMS line,
okay, CMS line comes from the data, so it's a kind of
it's an extraction from the data you did.
It's not our extraction, it's just a paper published by the CMS.
But that's the solid line,
this one,
the entire line. Okay,
yes, this one, and these three lines came from this paper. So It was the same analysis, the same type of analysis, but for hadron colliders. So the results are just extracted from this analysis, and it was done for this basically the same model, but with this assumption that they don't have tau in their analysis, because in their case, they have only two non-zero couplings. So they have only electrons and muons. In our case, we have all the free leptons, and of course, because tau can escape the detector, just by decay. Then our results are slightly worse.
But then the natural question is, what would your line look like? Okay, better, but better by an order of magnitude, or
not really? We try to do it for some points, and it was like a factor of a few. But it's not very easy to like extrapolate our results, because then you just have to rerun the whole analysis, because it's slightly different. For example, for lower masses, when you have
processes, you have to redo the whole thing.
For very high masses, like 2,000.
Okay. But then this plot is, if you want, dangerous for you, because it could be better. It's like a pessimistic assumption, essentially. Okay, thank you.
Yes, that's.
I also see that she has a question. We have time for that.
Yes, we just do under this, since we are talk about the long-lived particles here. Do we worry about a little bit about this Or can we improve your sensitivity with this long-lived particle signature like displaced vertex? Since mix angle going to 10 to minus 7.
Yes. So in principle, you could go to long-lived particles, but then your coupling would be at so low level that probably you would produce like a few heavy neutrinos. So observing such a particle would be very challenging. So I'm not really sure if really we can get better results for example, displaced vertices analysis for very low couplings and for very high masses, because you just have too low particles, too few particles to observe something.
Okay,
We have to cut it here because the time is already quite late on the schedule. We can follow up on Mattermost anyway. Anyway, Xi, now is your turn. Thank you very much for your talk, Christoph. Okay, so Kiping, we can see you. Can you share your slides, please?
Can you see?
1 second, it's loading for me. Yes, can you try to change them? Try to go to the next one. Oh yes, that's perfect. Okay, so you're gonna be talking about HNN searches at the electron-ion collider. Okay, thank you very much. Please go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for your collider for this invitation. And it's a pleasure for us to present our result here. And this work is done with a few colleagues in PIT, like Brian Bataillon and Tao Han. And also, so our visitor, Tata Ghosh, she now is a faculty in HRI in India. So we have submitted a slow mass white paper two months ago, roughly. And the real papers, actually, some more official work will come very soon, like hopefully this month. So just give us a very simple introduction and motivation. Since EIC electron ion collider is approved and it will definitely will be built in Brookhaven and National Lab, and since this highly cost colliders we need to take advantage of this collider to explore as much as we can. Of course, the EIC main features, I just need some of them, like the polarized electron beam and neutron beam, including mostly proton beam. And it can also extend to heavy ion. That is slim indicated. So we can have the deuteron or even heavy ion, like union or lead. The central mass energy is not very high, can up to optimistically to 140 GeV. But the biggest advantage for this collider is high luminosity compared to the existing the DIS machine like HERA. It can reach the factor of 10 or up to 10 factor of 1,000 times compared to existing luminosity. So of course, the goal of ESA is mainly as a QCD machine. It will probe the proton spin and or this quark gluon content of proton, or even you have ion. However, we should also take advantage of this machine to think about other physics like electron wake precision physics or even BSM. So I give at least this or even a very big slow mass white papers here, which needs lay out on many possibilities there. And our standalone white paper or our standalone study will serve as one of the case study in this direction. So we take this heavy neutron lepton as example to. So let's we call a little bit about the setup of EISA, which we'll take in our inputs. The electron machine and this EIC machine energy with the indicate can up to 140 GeV. So electron beam, proton beam, I listed here. The integrated luminosity, I just can be up to 100 inverse Fendbar. And the detectors, the configuration is like this. Of course, you have the proton come from one direction and the electron from another direction. And the basic setup, like the tracking system, the calorimeters, and also the angle coverage, I just do some basics, come up to 3.5 in the forward direction, in so which is the kind of impressive. So this is a basic up we take and for our inputs. So let's look at our what we can do with this this machine. So we take this heavy neutral lepton models. So I just write down this this basic Lagrangian and the corresponding interaction in, with the standard model, mostly from this gauge the boson W and Z. And the cross section I list here compared to this normalized to this mixing angle, it can reach to kind of 30 peak bar. So when we times consider about this numerosity to which roughly come to 100 inverse center bar. So the events, if we consider we mix angle to be unit, the events can be up to 1 million events. So that's a significant advantage compared to the existing team in machine or even existing HERA like that. So when we fold it into this, consider about this mixed angle, so we can, if we want to produce this heavy neutral lepton up to order of 1 to 10 events, it can be reaches to the sensitivity to this mixed angle down to 10^-6. That's the goal, that's our hope to explore this with this machine. So let's see how far we can go. Let's first list about this two kind of the scenario, two kind of parameter region. One is kind of the high mass, higher mass with smaller, with larger mixed angle. In this region, we will, this one is mostly useful for this promoted decay search. So I list a few signature channel, like the Marillard type, we can have charged flip sun with a few heavy jets. And also we can also have this charged flip sun with also flavors changes channel, like the mu channel, which is also very unique signature from Marillard heavy neutral lepton. But for Dirac lepton, on Dirac heavy lepton, so we don't have some unique sound, so we can just do normal signature like electron plus, like lepton plus, lepton minus with the coverage of all the possible combinations. So for the Marana with the flipped electron sound, and with together with three type of jet, we have an advantage to well absorb all the fun state, so we construct this the heavy lepton on inversion mass. So example, we can take this the 10 GeV of heavy lepton, and we can fully reconstruct the heavy the inversion mass based on this one. You can see, compared to this background usually is spread out but the signal will be located around your heavy lepton mass about 10 GeV. This is a unique signature that we can take advantage to isolate or to suppress the background and sink out signify this the signal. So let's just to focus on this signature first. This is because this signature, this can give us strongest signal. We have also performed this all the four configuration, the detector simulation, and we have optimized this the card, kinematic card to in order to magnify the signal and suppress the background, I list all of them. And then the card flow table here. And the biggest background coming from this misidentification of the electron. Because the large events coming from this just to the DIS scheduling, which just misidentify one electron with your flip sum and with faked flip sum. So we just to optimize this card flow and then we found this mass window. This as I mentioned, the inverse mass card can largely heavily suppress this background, and we take advantage of this one. And the current existing In most precise misidentification of electron or misidentification rate can be up to 0.1%. So this is the existing thing we can take. But in the future, let's project some one order magnitude improvement in the future. So we can obtain a better sensitivity. Let's say this sensitivity, what we can get. So you can see this, just to project two of them with two misidentification efficiency. The one is the existing 0.1%, one is the future, we just to assume one order magnitude improvement. You can see this sensitivity based on this simulation, we can at large inverted large heavy electron mass, like a order of 10 GeV, we can reach this 10 to this mix angle up to 10 to minus 3. Sometimes can improve this misidentification rate. We can even reach 10 to minus 4. Oh, so that's the main message from the prompt decay search. Of course, we also consider about other channel, like we have mentioned about this flip sign with the muon flavors channel. For this one, and with its unique signature, however, we have a significant background coming from this tau decay, which with specific flavor. This will pollute this signal. As a result, this channel give us comparable sensitivity. And others, direct signals, we don't have unique signature, so we just perform this lepton pairs without the plus the signature one jet plus missing energy. And they give some sensitivities, which roughly give us the similar sensitivity compared to the mix angle with the de Marella type. So that's the main message from this promoted decay. Since we are talking about this long-lived particle.
Sorry, you have 4 minutes to go. Eh?
Okay, thank you. Well, we are talking about this long-lived signature, long-lived particles. It's a great advantage for us to take this signature to identify these heavy leptons. And for this long-lived particles, when this immersion mass, the heavy lepton mass to be small and the mixing angle to be small region, this lower corners, this one will correspond exactly to this the non-level particle signature, and we show this the decay length, you can see up to the detector size. And we have done this simulation and use this signature. We have the background, we also take consideration for standard models have the Meson decays. With the signature, you can say this is D meson or B meson decays. And the long-lived particle signatures for this for 5 GeV heavy lepton can be reached to significantly inside of the detector, but others which we standard background can be suppressed. So we have performed this event selection, some typical event selection, and we take some typical transverse impact factors and perform the full simulation of the detector size configuration, like the cylinders size. And we have get this sensitivity. It use this long-lived signature. You can see this exactly probe the low mass and the low inversion mass, low mixing angle regions, which up to 10 GeV, and the mix angle can probe down to 10 to minus 6. So with different setup, and compared to existing in search, especially from CMS, we can cover new parameter space. So this, let's summarize the EIC sensitivity, both from this promoted decay and this displaced vertex. The promoted decay, we can probe sensitivity compared to existing for the large inverted mass, large heavy lepton mass, and roughly higher mixing angle. In the low inverted mass, low heavy lepton mass, and the low mixing angle, we can use this long-lived signature to probe new parameter space region. So that's our Monkey plot. So last one, we just one, we then towards from this invisible decay, because so the heavy lepton can decay into some missing black dark matter. So this signature show up at ESA at MonlaJet. We also consider about this signature to come to say this how large we are sensitivity can go. So this one we found is largely depends on the systemic, how better we can go. So if we consider about this zero systemic, we can get a comparable sensitivity based on this signal. But if we cannot well control about this systemic, like 0.1% or 1% systemic, we lose sensitivity based on this channel. So let me conclude. The ESA, they will open up a new QCD frontier, but we also need to consider about the BSM search. So we take this heavy lepton neutral lepton model to probe. With the displaced vortex, we can cover the new perimeter space with a few GV range, mass G range. But for the problem search, we can and also to get comparable probe compared to the existing search. So this study will inform us about the future ESA detector design, especially about this tracking system for this displaced vortex. Of course, there is so many other possibilities to probe, which I need to this reference here. So let me stop here and take question.
This is brilliant, 15 minutes and 0.2 seconds. So questions, anybody? I have one question, actually two. So can you go to slide, 10 is fine, for example. My question is, have you considered the case of Majorana, therefore, for example, charge current violation where you have same leptons that you could use in order to reduce the background? And also, have you considered coupling to the taus? Because surely here you are competitive, but the phase space is very crowded. But if you move to the coupling to the taus, then that's not the case.
For the coupling to the tau, you mean this heavy lepton coupling with tau, or?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, for that one, we have do some preliminary study, but we didn't find the advantage compared to the existing search. So we didn't emphasize that direction. In another word, say that there is no advantage to probe that parameter as with this machine.
Sorry, can you repeat the last part?
I mean, for this, of course, since ESA is initialized, so it's very sensitive to electron flavor. So that's why we focus on this electron coupled to this heavy lepton. For others, like you mentioned, this couple tau, so definitely this can provide some probe, but there is no advantage compared to the existing machine to probe.
Okay.
Like LHC can provide even IOC is some others, Collider can probe stronger probe compared to this ESA.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. I see, maybe I take the question from Jürgen. This is not a convener. Mm-hmm. Jürgen, please. Jürgen, we cannot hear you. I see you are muted.
Albert.
Take a question from Albert then, yes.
Good, he can be heard. Two quick questions, in fact. The 100 inverse femtobound is for how many years of running?
I need to check, it's roughly 5 to 10 years.
5 to 10 years, okay. And the plot as we have it here on figure 10, it doesn't actually say which data you show that is already showing excluded reason. Is this the recent data from the collider? I think they go to lower couplings at the low masses than what seems to be excluded here.
We have included the existing search, like this, the recent existing search, but of course the projected one can go below.
But even the existing one, I think, I mean, existing since a few months or so, seems to be going a bit lower than what you have. I have like 10 to the minus 6, around 5 or so if I compare my plot. So maybe you check once if it's really up to date, just for the sake of getting questions mm-hmm. somewhere on a conference, for example.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We have checked that one. Actually, the most one, the updated one coming from CMS.
Okay.
CMS have updated, but it's not goes too far compared to this plot.
Okay.
Okay, thank you very much. I think we can take the question from Jürgen.
Okay, just very quick, and now you can hear me, right?
Yes.
Okay, great.
Well. Yeah.
So can you say a few words about the status of the standard model predictions for the electron-ion collider? So what are the, let's say, predictions? I think the last calculations have been done for Hera-like situations. Are there any improvements, or are these calculations still good enough to get an estimate on the or a prediction on the standard model backgrounds for these processes?
Standard model background for this process. So we have used this up to last leading orders. Of course, which we can improve up to last leading order, but that one will not change our conclusion based on this study. For other process, definitely maybe we I'm not sure so how like the DIS measurement, because the ESA is mostly COCD machine. For COCD study, definitely we need that one, but not for BSM search.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you for the talk. We can now move to our own Albert. It's not full screen yet. Now it is.
And now my microphone is on. So
now you're unmuted. Yes.
All right. So this last contribution for this session is a different kind of paper than the ones we discussed before in this session. This is on a white paper, which was, as you will see, commissioned in the SnowMars effort. And it's about the present and future status of heavy neutral leptons. So it's a kind of a summary from whatever we got information from, and some maybe some channels you're not aware of. So in that sense, it may be interesting. And then these are the actors, which you see here that have worked on this paper and signed it. Okay, so as said, was commissioned by the Neutrino Physics Frontier Group, and it was done in concert with the Energy Frontier and the Rare Processes Frontier. At least there was communication in getting things done, and I'm not sure we got all the information, but we got quite a bit. And the overall editors were myself and Ian Schumacher, and you'll see all the characters for the different sections we have in that paper, from theory, collider searches, more beta decays or nuclear, as it became a nuclear chapter, fixed target experiments or extracted beams if you want, atmospherics and solar data, and also from cosmological bounds. And this is the archive where you can find that, where the first version is on. And the revised version, or with the input we get, we will still submit when things calm down on all the input we get. In detail, not to be looked at or stared at maybe right now, but you can see this is the contents of the paper. It's about 70 pages or so, with a theory, motivation, introduction, and some visions there on what they wish for the future to see. Collider searches takes a large chunk in that. Nuclear decay searches or nuclear processes, I would say, a smaller fraction than the extracted beams, with a whole lot of process projects going through, and then the two other chapters, which I will come up to. Now, the content of the paper is a snapshot at the status of the start of 2020. The deadline for the SnowMars papers was like February earlier this year. So, for example, the latest results of ATLAS, which came a month or 2 months later, are not at this present time included there. But that it's more on prospects anyway that we're trying to do. From the theory, I will not say too much. Mark was supposed to be around, but he couldn't be. We couldn't volunteer him for the talk here. But I will not go in too much of effort in here. Just saying one interesting plot, which you may see time and over again in coming times when these heavy neutral leptons are discussed. And that is the connection with the standard model neutrino physics, with the fact that we know we have oscillations, we have a mass pattern with the active neutrinos, and how that interacts with the HNLs in order to have, for example, HNLs to be a reason or an explanation for the fact that these active neutrinos have masses. And right now, if you look at the parameter space of the oscillations for the active neutrinos, and you map that on this ternary diagram, which is showing the couplings to the different neutrinos of the heavy neutrinos to the light neutrinos on this side, normalized to the sum of all the couplings to this neutrino. So that's where they run sort of like roundish about one and between zero or above zero. Then these are the regions which are allowed right now, depending also if you have a normal ordering or an inverted ordering in the neutrino case. I mean, you heard about that yesterday, about this question that we don't know the exact ordering of the three neutrino masses as we have. This is as it is today, but interesting, if you get into Dune in the future, then these regions, because of the better knowledge of these oscillation parameters, will be actually coming into this kind of ellipses you see here, which would be allowed for. So the phase space for the HNL parameters would be very constrained. So once you start measuring it, you can actually see if you observe these right-handed neutrinos, if they are actually in sync with explaining what is happening in the neutrino sector so far. Note that this is for a simplest model and for two active states and so forth, but it's a start that shows you that there is this intimate connection, which is not necessarily to be forgotten. By the way, in the theory part, they're stressing particularly also that we should go beyond non-minimal models, as I will show for future, and which would include that we take one and more active flavor at a time. Now we take just single active flavors in the HNLs as benchmark points. But on the benchmark points itself, there is not much discussion in this paper. That's referred to discussions which happen in the Physics Beyond Collider studies or the FIPS forum, which I will show a little bit later, where in fact the theorists and all the experiments are working together to get more benchmark points defined. For the collider, I'm almost not going to say anything, because that is something we are quite familiar with, and this is just some of the plots and some of you have seen during this meeting in any case of projections for example, the LHC, or for all the experiments which are being thought of as possible extra experiments to cover more of the phase space. And that's well known to us, so I don't need to preach the choirs here. But one thing I did observe while we made this, that for the high luminosity LHC, for example, there are not really prospects made by ATLAS and CMS or LHCb for that matter, as you have on many other BSM scenario studies, that from the knowledge we have presently, we extrapolate that to the high luminosity with all the assumptions required. That for HNLs, we actually didn't have that. The only results I found were phenomenological studies, which are good to give you a hint where you're going, but that's maybe we would like to do something better on that in the experiments. That's a call on the experiments to think about that. And maybe that's a thing once we have all the run two analysis completed, to think about that. You may remember in the HNL group, we had also ongoing developments on generators from the HNLs from the HNL discussion group, which we have reported in these meetings and some sub-meetings we had, and particularly work of Phil and Richard is involved in that. We have included the state as it is, what is available in that document as well. So this is not yet a final word, and we're still developing that further, but at least people see what's there and what are possible things to come. Now, for the extracted beams, there are a number of prospects for projects discussed, like the ones we know well, like NA62, but also NSHIP, for example, but also the new proposal CERN, which was presented last Lepton, the long-lived particle meeting we had, number 10, and a number of other experiments, which not all of you may be familiar with. Most are in the neutrino sector, but not all. And then that FNAL and JPARC, for example, in what their possible projections are for sensitivities they can reach. And they have been thinking and working about that. I give one explicit example here. This is for DUNE. And this is what is now the official sensitivities of DUNE. They hadn't been done really within DUNE, but there were phenomenological studies for that. And now this has been done for and within the collaboration. I will not go into the details. You can find it back in the paper here, but it is for the most recent configurations of the near detectors, which we have, and for the protons on targets profile, which we expect, which is 6 plus 6 years thing, which means it's 6 years of the starting intensity of the beam, and then plus 6 year of the high intensity of the beam. And then for the different scenarios, it is set what the different sensitivities are for the HNLs with dominant coupling to electron, muon, or tau here, or the flavor universal one. But that, for example, covers, if you want, in its totality, up to 12 years of data taking. This is an overview of projects where you can compare them. For example, just the lookup table, which is giving you the beam types you have, the detectors, distances, the decay volumes, distance from the dump, protons on target, and not in the least, potential timescales or putative timescales as they are today. So if you are interested in a particular region of phase space or so, and you see this or that experiment can cover it, this is giving you somewhat more information at one glance, more details obviously in the text. As particularly for CERN, I just know two things here. There are the these are future new experiments we can have. Now, SHIP is something which has been talked about for the last 5 to 8 years or something. That you saw there was no date given here because for that experiment, that was not sort of favorably encouraged with the last European strategy meeting, although it was certainly not said it should not happen. It was just said we don't know where to find the money for that experiment. So for that experiment, people have been rethinking of a more cost-efficient option for building the beam dam facility, which was the most expensive component in that. And there are now ideas how it could be made more cost-efficient and to a large factor, which I shouldn't name yet because it's not terribly efficient, but it's enough to be having under rediscussion with similar, if almost identical, sensitivity as was in the original proposal, but maybe a bit less grand in what one wanted to do, what were all the new things one wanted to do to build this experiment. And the second one is a new project. I'll just remind it here. There was no specific talk on that in this meeting. But Guy Alafranchi gave a presentation at the last meeting of a new detector, which would be sitting, this is actually decay volumes with spectrometer, and the beam comes from this side through it, and it's sitting next to NA62, so it's an off-axis experiment, but benefiting from the high rate and protons and target you get connected with NA62. That is at the moment of an expression of interest, which has been submitted to the committee here and is now with the referees. And that's also, if we see it, it may happen. If it happens, it's something like 10 years from now, what it costs to build and approve and finance and so forth. Now, new, which are in this paper, are with all these projects and which I mentioned before for these extracted beams and all the works being done, that the new sensitivity curves are being given, and these are being plotted on such plots. And you see, just as usual, the complementarity that is being probed by Dune, which is the green line, which you see somewhere here, maybe not so good on this one. And the 62 ship and shadows for the different, here you see Dune better, for example, for the different projects. And you see particularly that these neutrino experiments are going to be good below the Kaon mass in that region here. And then, of course, the higher energy beams take over, because the neutrino experiments typically have only a lowish energy beam on target. Well, low for ship, it's for Dune, it's probably 100 GeV, but it's nothing compared to the 400 GeV, for example. And that's the same for the Tau. So you can look at that at your leisure. So these are now sort of like the newly released plots for that with all this information in. Then let's, in the last few minutes, say something on something else that is searches for HNLs, for example, in the very low mass range, which means up to maybe 10 MeV or so and below, starting from the KeV level. And then we come into the nuclear processes, particularly like beta decay searches, where like Catherine is doing. Now, Catherine measures the beta decay spectrum. In fact, they're only interested in this part here to find if the electron neutrino has a mass or so, but in the spectrum itself, if there would be HNLs, you could get kinks. And so, well, that's something they don't normally spend a lot of time measuring, but if they will at some point in time when they're exhausting this component here, and now they take test measurements in here looking for these kind of kinks. And a particular upgrade of Catherine, which is called Tristan, would be able to measure differentially here and would have a good sensitivity in that region, so that you could search for these kinks in some interval between a few KeV till about almost 18 KeV, which is the endpoint which you have here for HNLs. And this would be like the Catherine sensitivity itself compared to excluded bounds already in that region. And that would be the Tristan upgrade one, which would start in 2025 or so. Dune can also play a role in here, looking at argon-39 atoms that are decaying. And if you don't do anything special for the triggers for that, this is where Dune would sit in the coupling and mass. You go to higher mass because the K value here is more like 850 G, 400 KeV here. And if you do something special on the triggers and the analysis, which is, of course, coming at a price, you could go like two orders of magnitude further down in couplings measuring that. And there are a few others I will not go.
Now, Albert.
Yeah, sure. I will a few others which I will not go into detail. That is the electron capture, which is like a reverse beta decay process, reactor-based, what they call IBD type of events. Inverse beta decays and neutrinos beta double beta decay also can give information on that. Anyway, these plots are new in that. Then I think the final thing I talk about is the natural neutrino fluxes coming from either neutrinos from the sun or from the atmospheric neutrinos, which we have. And you have three kind of mechanisms that can lead you to having HNLs. Either they come directly from the neutrinos in the shower, or you can have such a what they call the double bang event, like you can also look for taus in ice cube, but with larger distances, and look for that. Now, using these techniques, and one is an, I forgot to say, one is an upscattering that neutrino interacts with the nucleus and creates or as an exchange here, and you get a heavy neutrino out. So this is for what Ice Cube could cover from these double banks that they have on the atmospheric neutrinos. And this is already something Borexino measured, this green curve here. So in this new region, where they could exclude under certain models. This is not a simple seesaw model, but a dual partial constraint model for HNLs to be found. So this is actually a new region confident from solar neutrinos by analyzing the Borexino data. The final thing, without giving too much detail on that, on the cosmological and astrophysical results, is there is an update of that with all the new bands in here updated, overlaid. This is a picture made by Marco with the reaches which we had before from the different colliders, and so that's that is as good as we know it right now, according to our group, which was working on that. And but since time is over, I will not go into the details here. At the end, this is a SnowMass paper. It gives recommendations, and the recommendations, which are all, I mean, in sort of the behold of what we are thinking, certainly that HNLs and long-lived particles by extent further should be a key part of experiments baseline physics program. That particularly goes to neutrino experiments, which do not have this as a baseline, but also Jay was discussing this yesterday. Future collider facilities should from the start consider requirements for such things. You know, we are all working on that. So we've had it here because this is being used for the SnowMass input. What I said from the theory, we should starting to think of scenarios which goes beyond the single flavor dominance, which we do right now. That's for the nuclear experiments, which we encourage, and case of a discovery, which we all would like to anticipate for. We also should think ahead in what actually we all need to measure it and how we're going to measure it if we're at some day so lucky that we actually see a signal. That's it, what I want to give as a summary of that, just to say that if this is the last day of this workshop, and if you're already thinking what to do with your time and would you like to have a new workshop, there is a workshop coming up at CERN, which is the FIPS 2020, which I also mentioned as a benchmark discussion forum where we're that happening at the moment. And there is, for example, also, well, there are three main topics they have, and one is the heavy flavors and their connection to the active neutrino physics. So you can have more than that. And I'll stop here. Thanks.
Okay, thank you very much. We are quite ahead of the behind schedule. So if there are no questions from the audience, I will refrain from asking questions. And I think we can conclude the session here. Thank you very much for everybody that participated. It's very refreshing to see so much new stuff on HNLs. So there is a coffee break now. In theory, that should be 15 minutes. I let the conveners of the next session decide if they want to squeeze this or not. Thank you very much, everyone.
But note that the first talk, the next session, is also about HNLs. So it's kind of a nice continuation.
It is indeed.
All right.
So do we keep it 5 minutes and we reconvene in 5 minutes?
No, as going to come back in 10 minutes, actually.
It's up to you, just speak.
Yes, we'll come back in 10 minutes.
All right, back in 10.
Thank you.